Welcome to Your Business, Your Life with Matt DeFrancesco, your personal financial technician. Whether you've had years of success in your business or just starting out, Hylett Financial can help you create a vision for your business, life, and family, and align these for generational wealth. As they say, what happens in your life affects your business. And now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to Your Business, Your Life with your host, me, Matt DeFrancesco. And so, hey, I'm glad to have you all here again. You know, I know we're kind of getting toward the end of the first quarter of the year, so I hope everybody's having a great start to the year. But, you know, one thing I'm really excited about is we always have a lot of great guests. And my guest today has really got a variety of experiences there. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about what he does, but also this idea of how to transition a business, because that's a lot of the work that I'm doing, especially in the automotive and collision industry, is helping shop owners to transition to the next generation. So Larry Dragan, he's got 40 plus years of experience in the automotive industry and actually still maintains all of his ASC certifications in auto and truck. So, but he's a second generation owner of Stan's Garage, which was established in 1941. And I'm interested because we were kind of going back and forth on email and he told me it's a unique second generation story. So I'm kind of excited to hear about that. It's in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. And he still serves as chairman of the board on it. So his son, Scott, has taken over the operations, but Larry still stays active in the automotive industry. So in the 90s, he got involved in mediation of problem vehicles and served on the arbitration boards for Chrysler and Ford. And then he still provides many services nationwide, including expert witness services, lemon law cases, pre-purchase inspections, automotive appraisals, automotive mediation, umpiring, and automotive business coaching and development. So I think that's pretty exciting there. And I'm kind of interested to hear some of this work because I know you do a lot of depositions. You're in court a lot, Larry. So we'll talk a little bit about what you do there. So he's a member of ASA, ASC Blue Seal, and IAAA, which is the International Automotive Appraisers Association. So Larry, welcome to Your Business, Your Life.
Thanks, Matt. Pleasure being with you.
No problem. So I'm kind of interested. You started in a garage and you stated as you were second generation, but it wasn't like the second generation is what most of us would think. So I want you to talk a little bit about how you got into that and then transitioned to your son and started doing some of the work that you're doing now.
Absolutely. Well, I started as a young kid taking apart things, lawnmowers and stuff, but my dad never had any idea how to put back together. a really good friend of the family, real close to our family, Stan Laskowski, was the owner of Stan's Garage, original owner. Mm-hmm. And I used to go up there and putz and help him work when from the age of 14. Working my way through high school, I worked at the garage. And then eventually when it was time for him to retire, he made the offer to me to buy the garage. It has been exciting career. I've looked back to it. I thank Stan a million times for giving me the opportunity and, you know, believing in me as I was a 19-year-old kid. I don't know if I'm turning my business over to a 19-year-old kid, if I would have the guts to do that, but he did. He had believed in me, believed in the faith, and it's worked out fantastic.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so now your son's involved. He's running the garage, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's actually the son owns the garage now. Same kind of story. Ever since he was five, he'd come to me and, you know, come to work with me on the weekends and, you know, days off school, and always been highly interested in the garage. And, you know, it's a good opportunity for him.
That's great. That's great. So how big of an operation do you guys have? How big is Stan's Garage?
Stan's Garage is 7 bays total. We got 6 inside. And from Florida, I learned to have an outside bay, weather depending. Heat Creek, the guys use it all the time. We keep our heavy duty truck lift outside for the big trucks.
Okay. Oh, so, okay. Yeah. Cause you're doing both trucks and automobiles.
That is correct.
Okay. So you had the garage, you decided to transition the business to your son, but you're still highly involved. So tell me a little bit about what happened there, how that transpired.
Well, my belief is that the owner of a garage needs to know every aspect of the garage. You need to know how the technician works, be a technician, be a service writer, be a parts runner. You need to know how every aspect runs. So I kind of brought my son up, starting as a technician, working him with a tech while moved him into the front office, taught him how to service write. And he always had the big interest in, you know, in taking over the garage for me. I was a little hesitant on it from the beginning. Industry's going, and again, didn't want him to, you know, labor and everything right now. The industry is kind of really hurting, but he proved himself to him. I taught him how to be an owner. I taught him that the owner needed to do. I'm getting a lot of classes, and he's doing a fantastic job. I'm very proud of him.
Right. It's interesting because, you know, a lot of times, again, working with these family businesses, and what I find a lot of times is that the parents sometimes have a misconception that the kids kind of learn this stuff by osmosis. And so maybe they're looking at having their kids kind of take it over. And then all of a sudden they start working in the business, and the parents are, you know, the parents are just like, they don't know what the heck they're doing out here. And they get start getting upset, and it can creates a lot of contention. It sounds to me that you kind of knew where he was going to need training and provided that leadership to for him.
Correct. I mean, there's a lot of aspects in the business. With the experience I had, I was able to train him. Are there things that still come up? For sure. You know, businesses are ever, you know, evolving. So doing a plan and getting your staff ready for your departure is huge.
Right.
I can't say it enough. It's tough getting into business and opening and getting established and growing, but it's three times harder when you're ready to exit your plan to get out of the business.
Yes, exactly. So did you do anything as far as helping to solidify, make sure those key employees stayed in place, that they were able to help provide the leadership that your son may need to kind of fill in the gaps?
Right. I mean, most of the employees were used to answering them to me, coming to me. So it was, you know, we kind of sat down, Scott, my son, we sat down and we kind of came up with a plan that, you know, took me from working 5 days a week to 4 days a week to 3 days a week to 3 days a month to three times a year. Mm-hmm. And it worked. You know, it slowly relieved people coming to me to start to go to him because I wasn't around. They all know, all the employees still know that I do work remotely. I am involved in the business. So that is a comfort fact to them that they know that I am still overseeing things. But, you know, it's going to be 7 years in July. Very rarely do I get any involvement with the business anymore.
Well, that's good. So you still kind of have some, you still kind of have your fingers in it, but not enough to be able to, like, on day-to-day control is really, I think, what you're saying there.
Correct. And again, most of the employees with me for a long period of time. And sometimes the guy that's 30 at the helm of the business now, that, you know, it sometimes that's a ripple in the water.
Right.
So, you know, making sure that you are still there and you're still there. If they need you, they can call you. Or, you know, I did show up on company meetings. You know, I'd pop in and sit at the meeting and listen to them talk. And, you know, off the beginning was a lot of work, but getting them to realize that Scott's the boss, not me. Yeah. It's a little transition. And we spent 3 to 5 years on our exit plan to make sure we got it right.
Right.
And we did.
Yeah, that, you know, it's interesting you say that, because that's, I think that's kind of the typical time frame that people look at. And sometimes, you know, you get some owners who are like, yeah, I just want to get out now. But it does. It probably takes that 3 to 5 years to be able to prepare yourself. One thing that, and this is a big challenge I run into with shop owners is, so, you know, they're coming to me. Most of my business comes from referral. They're coming to me. I want to exit. I want to start, you know, backing off next 3 years, 5 years, fully exit. But the problem is so I start talking to them about, okay, so what does this post-exit lifestyle look for you? And a lot of them have a hard time, like, defining that. It seems to me that you kind of had some other interests too that allowed you to make that transition much easier. So I think a lot of shop owners don't want to let go because they just don't know what they're going to do with their time. You know, maybe they like to golf. Well, how many times can you golf? I mean, you know, if you go three times a week, 4 hours, that's 12 hours out of 168 hour a week. There's still a lot of time left to, you know, to fill there. So did you kind of have this, like, these other interests that you wanted to pursue that made that transition for you easier?
Yeah, I did. And I kind of put it on the back burner for, you know, for the first year while I was tuned into helping the transition go smoothly. I've always done inspections and expert witness work, lemon law work, product liability work, you know, breach of warranty kind of work for attorneys. Right. In Michigan, I had a shop. But when you're running a shop, your time is limited. Always had a lot of people reached out to me, wanted to expand, wanted me to take on their cases. And I always had to push that back. So that was always my goal, is to kind of beef that up a little bit. I kept all the contacts added out to me over the years and wanted me to do work for them. And now, you know, I turn down more work than I take because, I mean, I have attorneys all the way across the country that want me to inspect a vehicle or a report on breach of warranties, lemon laws, or whatever the case may be. So,
right. Right. Is this basically, so is this against the manufacturers or the dealerships, or where are these suits coming from? I mean, where are they, who are they against, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, most of them are against the manufacturer, or sometimes depending on the cases. You know, I work for both sides.
Okay.
You know, if I got a manufacturer that wanted me to represent them and do an inspection, I would do it. But most manufacturers nowadays have their own, you know, factory reps and stuff that do all their own inspections and do all, you know, have their own side.
Okay. So do you think that because you had this outside interest that it did make your transition easier because you did have something else that you wanted to do and wanted to pursue?
Yes, it definitely may. You have to keep yourself, like you said earlier, I'm a boater, I'm a golfer, but how many times a week can I go boating and golfing without being bored?
Right.
You know, I retired when I was 50 years old, so I was still a young man. It was time for me to retire and time to pass the reins on because my son was 30. If I delayed retiring any longer, it would have pushed him into his mid to late 60s on a retirement, and I didn't want to do that to him.
Right.
So, you know, I stepped out a little bit earlier. I dedicated myself to being focused on the transaction business succeeding. Some businesses go to second generations and fail. You probably know the statistic. I don't know the number, but I know it's well over 50%.
Oh, it's closer to 70%.
Right. And I think a lot of that is, you know, some owners, you know, like when I bought the garage, I got tossed the keys and good luck.
Yeah.
You know, as long as he got his check every month, I never saw him. So, you know, I wanted it to be smooth. I want this business to go on to his son or his daughter or whoever he wants to pass it on.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. You know, and it's interesting because I think a lot of owners, especially that I work with, are kind of in the same boat where maybe they worked for somebody else and either, you know, they bought the business from them, but there really wasn't. It was kind of like what you said. They tossed them the keys, go to it. And so now they had to learn by the school of hard knocks. And, you know, the big challenge I run into is a lot of times when those kids are coming into the business and now they're looking at trying to do a transition that, well, you know, I mentioned about, you know, mom and dad think that, you know, they've learned this business through osmosis, which they haven't, but the kids also don't understand what the parent had to go through to build that business. And I tell the kids, a lot of times I have to take them aside and say, you've got to understand something, that this business is just like a child to them because they birthed it from nothing. I mean, when you're just handed the keys, you're trying to figure it out all on your own. And so did you find that there was any contention in that arena just because maybe he just didn't understand what you had to go through to build the business? And now he was kind of being given this operation that was already kind of fully functioning.
Not so much with Scott. Scott's a very appreciated young man. I mean, he appreciates everything it did. He saw me and he saw me working 80 hours a week, you know, growing up. And, you know, so he had been there and he's very grateful and very thankful for the opportunity to take this business and take it to the next level. He wants to get into multiple shops. He wants to be, you know, five or six shops in his future. I never wanted to do that.
Yeah.
I was busy enough with one shop. I made enough money to support my family with one shop. I didn't want three or four times the headaches. But, you know, he has a new vision for the company to keep it growing. And, you know, that's great for him. And yeah. I'll be by him side. And, he sends me buildings every now and then. I'm still involved in that way, you know, not only as his father, but, you know, as a mentor. I have an interest in his success. I want him to be very successful in what he's doing.
Right. So how are you structured? So he's 100% owner and you're just on the board.
Correct.
Do you receive any kind of compensation from the company as being that chairman of the board?
Yes, I do. I get paid for being chairman of the board. Okay. It was part of the agreement. Again, when you sell your business to family, you want to make it the most economical way, and you get less money than you would if you sell it outright. But you have a sense of security of having, I'm chairman of the board. So I still have the annual meetings and I'm still I log into the books anytime I want. I can see his plan. I'm helping him right now with a census thing that came in the mail that he needs to get the census report in, and he just doesn't have the time right now. He emailed it to me and I completed it for him. So you're there to help when it's your kid. But yeah, I get compensated for being chairman of the board. It's minimum, but you know, he is paying me for a reduced price for the business. Like I gave it to him. He is buying it.
Right.
And he said he's doing a fantastic job. He has a better rapport, I think, with the technicians and the employees, the manager and everybody that works there than I had. I was more hands-on. He's more, that's your job. You handle it, which is the way you're supposed to be. But I had a hard time letting go a lot of times.
And I think that happens a lot of times. And that's where a matter can intention is, but I admire that you and Scott have been able to work through a lot of this. And I think, you know, that's what I want the listeners to kind of gather from this is that, you know, you can have the best. We have to respect what our kids want and also kind of figure out what we want our lives to look at. And I think, you know, like I said, the big challenge is, you know, a lot of times these guys have this revolving 5-year plan because they can never get that whole lifestyle thing figured out. They're so used to be working in the shop that like, okay, what am I going to do with my time? And then the longer it goes, the more animosity that's built up. So I really appreciate that you guys kind of work through this and that you kind of understood where you needed to kind of step away, even though it was hard to do that. I mean, I'm assessing that right.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Something is hard to step away. You know, again, a lot of the conversations I have, he'll bring things up that are coming up or that are present in the business. And I always tell him, from my experience, Scott, this is what I would do. But I always finish the conversations I have with them. This is your business. You study it. You take what I've told you and you make the decision that you think is best. Mm-hmm. This business. Just because it's my decision doesn't mean it's best. But I always give him my honest opinion. And sometimes he goes with it. Sometimes he changes it a little. Sometimes he totally goes off on his own and goes a different way. But we have those conversations quite a bit because things come up and, you know, I wish I had somebody when I was in my 20s that I could, you know, pick up the phone or go see that would have been able to help me out. But a lot of seat of pant decision on my experience. And I've made a lot of mistakes as I've gone through the business. But you learn and you get better and, you know, you try to stay seasoned. And I try to help them as much and as often as I can. And physically, I haven't been in the shop probably last year, probably 4 days for the whole year. Okay. That I physically went. But that doesn't mean I wasn't working on my laptop from my home and, you know, doing something for him.
Right, right. And I want everybody to know that Larry is in Florida. I didn't ever even ask you where you are in Florida.
I'm in Cape Coral, Florida.
Oh, Cape Coral. That's right. Yeah, we did. We talked about that when we talked last week. So yeah, Cape Coral, Florida, but the shop's in Dearborn, Michigan. So I know a lot of the owners that are listening, they're talking about wanting to go to Florida, live in Florida. This is a way that you can navigate it. Something else, you know, and I know when we were talking earlier, when we kind of did our pre-call, I asked you the question, how long it took you to kind of like, from the time you said, okay, I want to transition to being able to do that and kind of figuring out the financial vehicles, because this is a lot of what I do is kind of help the shop owners to do this. And what kind of time frame did it look like? Was it for you to do this by yourself?
It was a good 3 to 5 years. I did use outside help. Yeah. I did get help from people that are experts in, you know, transferring business. Okay. I did talk to attorneys. I took a lot of seminars. I did a lot of ASA and ASC seminars on exit planning and, you know, did a lot of the groundwork. And a lot of it's the communication and the setting up the paperwork. And for me, the big thing was setting up the training. My kid can fix a car. He can be a service writer. He can be an owner. He can be anything he wants to be in the business because he's done it all.
Right. No, I think that's really important to know all those aspects of it. So, and I think it's good that you went out, you kind of knew where to go. You know, it's interesting. A lot of the guys that I work with have no idea. A lot of my referrals actually come from M&A people who owners come to them because they think their only option is to sell to a third party. And as they're interviewing them, they ask them, well, do you have a family member or somebody that might be interested in taking over the business? And a lot of them are like, yeah, but I have no idea how to do this. And so I think it was good that you were able to go out and find those people that could help you, guide you in the direction that you and Scott wanted to go.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's awesome. So just real briefly, because we're getting close on time, but I want to talk a little bit about, in addition to helping Scott with the business, you're doing a lot of mediation of problem vehicles and acting as an expert witnesses. What are some of the big issues that you're seeing out there as far as in the automotive industry that you're having to deal with as far as from a mediation standpoint?
All manufacturers make bad cars. Mm-hmm. When I sat on the arbitration board for Ford and Chrysler, I would see them back in the 90s. I mean, we're human. We make bad cars, make bad repairs. We are human. We make mistakes. So there's not one manufacturer more than the other that has bad cars. What I would like to see and what I usually say if I'm in court or testifying is that I would like to see the manufacturers except that they have built a bad car, mm-hmm. get it back from the consumer, destroy it, whatever you want to do to it, Give that consumer another vehicle just like they had, make him happy, and he will buy your product for the rest of your life.
Right.
But they go through hoops and jump the tallest buildings to prove that they don't build a bad car. And we all know that's not true. We're humans. We build bad cars. We, you know, as I said, I make bad reports once in a while. I'm human. I'll make a mistake in a report, but yeah, I will fix it and take care of it.
Right.
So that part for me is frustrating, but a lot of them is with the electronics. A lot of them that I'm seeing across the board are electronic issues. They can't find them. They, you know, again, technicians get paid a flat rate to check a car. So they got a problem. They're going to spend 15 minutes on it because that's all they get paid. And then they'll verify the can't verify complaint on the repair order. If they spent the time and had a salary guy or paid this guy whatever he needed to fix the car, they could fix them. But a lot of times it's bad grounds, bad pin connections. It's all, and mostly with electronics, it's so critical. Right. You have one bad loose ground under the carpet under the passenger seat, and you're going to have a haywire car.
Isn't that crazy?
Is it hard to find? Yes, it's very hard to find. But if you give this person another vehicle, exactly what they bought, you take this vehicle and put it in the back of the parking lot. If you're slow, you put somebody on it and find it. It's findable. It's fixable. It's just if the effort to find it and fix it.
Right, right. Do you think that with you know, the advent of EVs, and you know, I know the domestic manufacturers have already said, I know Ford specifically, I think by 2035 they want to have all their vehicles electric. The Europeans are already in that direction. Do you think that's going to increase the complexity of some of these issues?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm in Cape Coral, Florida. We got hit with the high of the hurricane. Any and every electric car that got anything touched near salt water is being totaled out. That salt is getting in the connectors, at wheel sensors, anywhere. And they're doing, the insurance companies are doing the right thing. They're pulling them out because they don't want to be married to that car for the next 3 to 5 years.
Right.
EVs have so much more electronics in it than the gas-powered vehicles. And yeah, it's going to be a problem.
Right. Right. You know, it's interesting that I'm wondering how the manufacturers are going to address that, because I mean, it is where everything's being, you know, where they're being forced basically into that. And, you know, you would have to address those issues, I guess, to maintain customer loyalty. Am I correct?
That is correct. Right. Correct. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it's going to, in the pay structure for technicians is going to change in the future, maybe going into salary. So, I mean, our drivability tech, you know, sometime would spend 6 hours on a vehicle when it was in my shop going back 7, 8 years ago. I would pay him for it. You know, we wouldn't bill for it. We couldn't always 7 or 8 hours out there. But our saying was, we can fix anything. And we could. If you spend enough time on it, you can fix it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny. The days of the grease monkey are over.
Oh, amen.
I mean, it's now highly, highly technical. I was at one of the conferences, a collision conference, and I was listening to a speaker, and he said, right now, I think there's about 30,000 different data points in a vehicle. And they expect the next 15 years that go to 500,000, and that the data centers are, you know, now they're this thing, there are phones. Okay. They're going to end up being our vehicles.
Amen. I believe it. It's a changing world. The technicians, again, and I don't know the exact percentage, but the last I read was like 70% of all technicians working on cars right now are between the age 50 and 60.
Right.
So what's going to happen to them in 5 to 10 years when they're all retiring? That's going to leave another 60-65% of technician shortage. That's already extremely short.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, one of the things I talk to a lot of my clients about is starting to look at how they're paying. And, you know, maybe you need to pay your technicians a wage that some type of computer programmer or somebody like that's going to be making. I mean, because that's basically what it's coming down to.
Correct. Correct.
So that's good. So Larry, do you have anything else you want to add to anything that we talked about? We're right about on time here. So, you know, I think it's brilliant how you were able to create this transition. I think the fact that you were able to get help doing it, being open to getting the help to do that was great. And then just, you know, being able to find that lifestyle after the business, or finding that life after the business, is that's probably one of the most critical things, because I think that's where most shop owners get hung up. So anything you want to share with us before we leave?
Anybody out there that's listening that has any further questions, want to talk to me, ultimateunlimitedllc.com is my website. current one that comes that's with for the new business of the consulting. If you have questions, feel free to log in. My phone number's on there, the email's on there. You shoot questions, I'll be more than happy to answer to them. And I appreciate the man having me on today. It was a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. So, and we're going to put all that stuff in the show notes too. So if you missed it, it's in the show notes. And, you know, I want to thank Larry. I think this was just a great, great talk. And the last thanks always goes out to you, the audience. Thank you for listening to Your Business, Your Life with me, Matt DeFrancesco. And if you've not subscribed to the podcast, please click on the subscribe button below. That way, when a new episode comes out and you want to hear some of these great guests that I've had, it'll automatically download to your device. And also, whether you're listening on the podcast or watching on YouTube, if you like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star rating. That helps us to move up the charts and get out to more people. So again, I want to just thank everybody for listening to Your Business, Your Life. Thank you, Larry. And let's make every day a great day. So take care and God bless. And we'll see you guys soon. Hey, I really want to thank you for listening to the Your Business, Your Life podcast. If you want to be notified when new episodes become available, click the subscribe button below.
The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of High Lift Financial. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investment, legal, or tax advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified professional with any questions you may have regarding your business or personal planning. DeFrancesco Financial Concierge, LLC, DBA, High Lift Financial, is a registered investment advisor. Registration with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission or any state security authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training.